Maras and Machpelah? No, it's a different Machpelah. Okay.
Not on it, but we were able to get it.
So Rav Hol said, we are on Daf Tesvav Amud Beis, and we're up to Yiboyelahu. So if you look about one third down from the top, I would say, I don't know exactly how to tell you how to find Yiboyelahu. Let's see, the first word in the line is Ve'i, if that helps anybody. So it's about 15 lines down from the top on Daf Tesvav Amud Beis. You have it?
Yeah, the E, actually.
Okay. So Yiboyelahu always introduces a suffix, and very often it ends up with a teku. In this case, we got lucky. There's going to be a final resolution of this. Now, by way of introduction, we need a chumash shmos here. I forgot to bring in a chumash shmos. Maybe there's one right behind you. I think you should find, Steve, a chumash shmos amongst those various chumashim, and see if you could open up to Yisro. I'm just trying to remember the exact perek. Just give me a second. Perek Yutes. That's right before the Aseres HaDibros, which start in Perek Chaf. Now here the Torah warns us that as long as the Shekhinah is hovering over the mountain or Mount of Har Sinai, then no one's allowed to go there, and that's a prohibition that includes even animals. And how far does the Torah go with this prohibition? It says in Pasuk Yud Gimel, do you see, you don't have it?
No, this is put together incorrectly.
Oh, I see.
Yisro's kind of split.
I see. It's a misprint. See if there's another shmos over there, maybe.
Sometimes they have two of them here.
No, that's the only shmos we have. Okay. So anyway, the Torah says, "In behema im ish lo yichye," which means that if an animal goes up the mountain or a human being, then he will die. Now, what that means is not that he will drop dead, you know, zap him on the spot with some misa b'dei shamayim, but that it's a capital crime. And thank you so much. Oh, this is called a mitzvah l'shoah. We have two categories of mitzvahs. One is called the mitzvah l'shoah, and the other is called the mitzvah l'doros, for all generations. This particular parasha in Shmos Yutes is what's called a mitzvah l'shoah. In this case, it's an isur l'shoah, los aser l'shoah. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hine Anochi Bo Elecha B'Avanon, etc. And then Hashem turns to Moshe, Lecha La'am V'Kidashtom Hayom U'Machar, Vayu Nechonim La'Yom Hashlishi, Ki B'Yom Hashlishi Yered Hashem Le'enei Kol Ha'am Al Har Sinai. So on the third day, after preparation of 3 days, God promises that He will come down, which is a reference to the Shekhinah, onto Har Sinai. V'igbalta es ha'am, which means set up boundaries that the people should be afraid, it should be at a distance from the Har. Lemar, it says, Yishamu lechem alos bahar, you're not allowed to go up. And then it says, Kol anogeh bahar mosi mas, but again, we're not sure about animals. Right now, it could be that Moshe Rabbeinu is getting the tzibi to address human beings. But then it says, in the very next pasuk, lo sigabo yad, ki sakol yisakel, o yore yiyore, im behema, im ish, lo yichyeh. And then, there's going to be a matir that's going to allow us to go up to the mountain, and that's called b'mshoch hayovel. This is a classic case of an aveira l'shoah. Our sugya is going to focus on the following question. When you see a mitzvah l'shoah, is it governed by the same regulations as a mitzvah l'doros? I'll give you an example. You know, the Rambam wrote a great work that's called Sefer HaMitzvos. And it's unbelievable because it's becoming even more and more popular with every passing second. I mean, tons of books now are being written on the Sefer HaMitzvos. And those books basically fit into two categories. One category is to understand why the Rambam counts certain mitzvahs in Tayag and he leaves out others. And the other book, the type of book, is an analysis of what's called the Shrushim. The Rambam has most of his book called Sefer HaMitzvahs. By the way, what language was it written in? Anybody know?
Arabic.
Right, it's written in Arabic with Hebrew letters. That's called Judeo-Arabic. And the Sefer HaMitzvahs is mostly the Shrushim. Now you would think the counting, the listing of the 613 is the bulk of the Sefer, but no. The Shrushim, he has tons of Shrushim. Shrushim means an analysis of which commands in the Torah should be counted and which should not be counted. So today I woke up, I was looking for the mitzvah of voting. I didn't find it. But I wanted to make a bracha when I went in. But so the Rambam, one of the Shrushim, the Rambam is that we don't count the mitzvah l'shah. If a mitzvah is only for a period of time, and it's not for all generations, it's not counted in the Tayag. And the Mefarshim ask, well, what my nafkamina? Like, who cares? What difference does it make? I mean, you count it this way, you count it that way. You know, there are many mitzvahs that the Rambam omitted and the Ramban added until we finally, you know, had to etch it out so it would be 613. But one of the nafkaminas they suggest is that a mitzvah l'shah operates with its own regulations. It dances to its own tune, so to speak. And you cannot derive any conclusions from a mitzvah doros as far as from a mitzvah l'shah as far as a mitzvah doros, or vice versa. Even if you have regulations that apply to mitzvah doros, there's no proof that they necessarily apply to a mitzvah l'shah. So our sugya, which we completed yesterday, works very hard to establish a source for the fact that when an animal has to be put to death, it has to be condemned in front of a bezin of how many judges? 23 judges. What about the mitzvah l'shah, which means hagbolah, that we have to stay away from the mountain, and if we come close to the mountain, we could be judged as a capital crime for skila? What about the shor? Now you may say, well, the shor is not included in this isur, but the Torah says explicitly, and the Torah says that in behema, in ish lo yichya, so we have to put the shor to death. So Yibayelahu, the Gemara wants to know, Shar Sinai, the Shar at the time of Har Sinai, where the Torah says in Behemah, Lo Yichyeh, Bekama, how many judges do we need to put this Shar to death if it comes in contact with the mountain? Mi Gomar Shah Midoros, shall we derive the mitzvah l'shah of staying away from the mountain from the mitzvah l'doros, meaning as far as putting a shor to death, let's say a shor roveh, a shor niskal, we require 23 judges. The same rules will apply with regard to l'shah, with regard to the case of shor Sinai. And that means that the shor Sinai would only be judged in front of a beis din of 23 judges. Oh, lo! Oh, should we say no? Lo means that we don't use the regulations that apply l'doros and apply them l'shah. L'shah works to its own, beats to its own tune. Now we're going to have a major, major tosfos here. Dibra Maskel Mi, it's the third tosfos on your page. It looks very innocuous. It's only a short tosfos, but before we get to tosfos, let's just see the final maskot of the sugya. Toshma. And the Gemara quotes a brisa that's brought down by Rami Bar Yechezkel, Tani Rami Bar Yechezkel, Im behema im ish lo yichya, ma ish bi esrim u'shlosha, af behema bi esrim u'shlosha. Now the pasuk that this brisa is interpreting is the pasuk of Shor Sinai. And the pasuk indicates a hekesh, an equation, because both ish and behema are written in the same breath, that the laws that govern an ish govern a behema. Now, what's the... Okay, so the ish requires a condemnation in front of a beis din of 23, so too does the shor. What's the underlying assumption here of this brisa.
Excellent.
That there's no difference between Lidoros and Lashah, and if Lidoros, a human being, could not be condemned to death without 23, so too Lashah, a man who comes in contact with the mountain at the time of the Shekhinah, he also would be condemned in front of but not less than 23 judges. Ah, now that we know that we equate Shah and Doros, now we can say the following. Since the Pasuk equates Behema with Adam, with Ish, it's coming to tell you that halacha which applies Lidoros, and now we're applying Lashah, that a man who violates the Sinai, he will be put to death with a judgment of 23 judges, so too a Behema will be put to death in front of 23 judges. Now comes along Tosus. And Tosus says the following. We have a principle, I should write it on the blackboard maybe. It's called Maida Hava Hava. That which was, was. What does that mean? Anybody know? It's a principle all over Shas. Maida Hava Hava.
It's not a precedent.
No, Maida Hava Hava means it's irrelevant. We never ask questions in halacha that are irrelevant. We're not interested in theory, we're interested in practice. And although Tosus doesn't quote that explicitly, but he's saying, well, what's this all about? I mean, we need here a discussion about, you know, when was the last time you saw a Shah of Sinai? You know what I'm saying? So it could be that back in the time of Sinai, when they had to judge the Shah for death, this question that's raised here in the Gemara is very relevant, very pressing. How much of a court, what's got... But what's it got to do with us? Now, in the note here, which I have from the Masifta, he quotes Tosus Rabbeinu Peretz. That's a different one of the Baliyat Tosus. He adds a little, you know, fuel to the flame over here. And he says the following. Sometimes you find in the Gemara another principle, and that's called Drosh V'Kabel Schar, which means that even if a parasha in the Torah is totally irrelevant, there's no practical implications, learn the parasha and you will be rewarded. He says, don't even dream that principle of Drosh V'Kabel Schar could apply here in this discussion about Shar Sinai. Because the Gemara is asking Shar Sinai Bekama, whenever you see the word Bekama, which means what are the requirements, in this case how many judges, that means that there's a nafkimina, there's some sort of issue which is practical. And it, you know, the lawyers use the phrase, it cuts eyes. And what is the practical difference over here? So it's not that the Gemara is asking, well, let's learn some sort of philosophical lesson that's inherent in a parasha. Like, for example, I spoke about this last Shabbos, Ben Soru Mora. So the Gemara says, Eino Asidli, the conditions for Ben Soru Mora are so impossible, it never will be, it never was, and never will be. So the Gemara says, El Drosh V'Kabel Schar. So the Gemara is applying that principle of Drosh V'Kabel Schar. And we have to derive certain meaningful messages from the parasha Ben Soru Mora. However, in this case, we're not looking for philosophical hashkafic derivations. The Gemara is asking, Bekama, how many judges do we need? Which is a pure halachic question. So Tosus here raises a possibility which has to be analyzed in many, many different sugyas where the Gemara asks, Maida Hava Hava. And Tosus says that there's such a thing called Hezber HaMikros. What does Hezber HaMikros mean? Tosus says that sometimes the Gemara might vacillate back and forth on an issue simply to understand the Pasuk. If it sheds a light on the meaning of the Pasuk, in this case the Torah says Lo Yichya with regard to this behema, and we want to know how does that come about, even though today it's not at all practical because we're not at the point of Har Sinai, nevertheless, we want to know what's the taich, what's the pshat in the pasuk. And that's a big chiddush of Tosfos, that when the Gemara asks a halachic question, it's really just trying to clarify the meaning of a pasuk, even though it has no practical dimensions, that's enough to solve the issue of Maida Hava Hava. But Tosus Rabbeinu Peretz that we mentioned before gives another answer. Now, I don't know how you're going to get excited about this answer. I don't want to prejudice you, but you'll tell me, you know, if we took a vote here, because today is a good day to do that, then what would you say about Tosef Beit Peretz's answer? He says, a man said, Hareini Nazir, he accepted upon himself a Nazir, im means on the condition, Sheshar Sinai Nerag bi Esrim v'shalosh. Is he a Nazir or is he not a Nazir? I don't know. Let's take a vote. I mean, how many people are excited about Tosef Beit Peretz? I mean, it's a very creative answer, but I think he's dodging the question. I mean, you know, you could always ask a theoretical question and know whether it's right or wrong, Eves or Sheker, and then make it Tanai. So a man marries a woman. He says, Areat Mekudeshesli Almanas Sheshar Shar Sinai Niskal V'Esri V'Shlosha. Is he married or is he not married? The Meiri says in Afkamina, the Adam Sha'omer Harealai Lahalbish Anim, I take upon myself a pledge for tzedakah to support Anim. How many Anim? Say, you know, how many poor people? It's not an open-ended, endless pledge or neder. Kiminyan Hadayonim Shayutrichim Ladun Shar Sinai. So how many Anim does he have to support? 23 Anim, because that's the Maskana Sasugi. Then there's a Yerushalmi. We don't have this Yerushalmi. But the Yerushalmi says the following. That when the Torah adds here, there were a couple of words here that I sort of read quickly because I'm not sure exactly what they mean, but we have to go into detail. It says, Kisakol Yisakel, O Yaro Yi Yare. So if you look in Rashi, what's O Yaro Yi Yare? He says that this has to do with skila. What does it mean? It means nidachim lamata mi beisa skila she gavah shte komos v'yushlach lamata laoretz kemo yara bayam. Now yara bayam means when you thrust something, thrust it with a certain force into the yam. So this is going to tell us exactly how to do skila. The Yerushalmi has a different take on this. That Yaro Yira, those two words, are totally superfluous, totally unnecessary. And when you have two words that are unnecessary, or for that matter one word, it's called what? A ribui. What's a ribui? In English they call it an inclusion. I think. So you have to include something that you wouldn't have included. So he says, in the name of the Yerushalmi, we don't have this Yerushalmi, that the law of Har Sinai is a law that applies whenever there's Shechina, even if it's not at Har Sinai. And that's why the extra pasuk Yaro Yira, Lerabos, Shiloh Ubeis Olamim. Now the Mishkan in Shiloh stood, if I'm not mistaken, for 369 years. Anybody remember? Whatever the number is, it's almost four centuries. And it had a din, to some extent, of a Mishkan, of a Migdash. And for example, it allowed you to eat Maisusheni and Kodshim and so forth and so on. And then after the destruction of Shiloh, they established at the time of Shlomo Melt the Beis Olamim, the Beis HaMikdash. In both cases, according to the Yerushalmi, there's something called Shechina, and the mind-boggling conclusion is that if a Shar enters into this area called Shiloh, or the Beis HaMikdash, or for that matter, a person who's not qualified, he's not allowed to go in there, then that shar is judged as a shar sha'ol al Har Sinai, at the time of the Shechina over Har Sinai, v'chayv misa. And therefore we have to know how many judges would sit on a court during any period of time of Shechina, whether it's Shiloh or whether it's Beis Olamim. Beis Olamim means either the first Beis HaMikdash or the second, and for that matter, the third Beis HaMikdash Yibaneh. And we have to know how many judges we need to kill the Shar. Now, Rabbosa, I'm not telling you we have to accept the Yerushalmi, but if you do, that really answers Tosis's kasha, because any din that applies to Beis HaMikdash is called a mitzvah of Doros.
How do you do kaparos so you can't get a shor up
there? Very good. Yeah, you're going to have a problem with kaparos. So that's the sugya here. Okay, Rabbosa, now we start the main sugya for today. So what I suggest is that we go back to the Mishnah, as we always do, and we'll take a look at the Mishnah. So the part of the Mishnah that we want to look at is, let's see, I'm not sure if it's easy to count from the bottom or count from the top, because it's basically smack in the middle of the Mishnah. The first word in the line is Hazev. So you know what we can do? We can count the wide lines in the Mishnah. Does that help anybody? I don't know. Your Gemara doesn't help anybody. So at least in my Gemara, you count from the wide lines that starts with the word Vegomrim, 10 lines down, and you'll see a line that starts Hazev. And we're talking now about 6 different species of very wild, undomesticated, dangerous, belligerent animals. 6 species. So the first is called Ze'ev. Okay, Mitch, no, don't take this personally. Okay, the next one is Ari, which is a lion, and a dove is a bear. And different types of bears. I mean, some bears are really deadly if they get angry at you. Hanamer. Now, Namer is actually a leopard, but the only problem is that the next word is complicated. That's called a Bardalus. And a Bardalus is really... I think it's a subspecies of the leopard. A cheetah. So is a cheetah part of the leopard family? It's a cat? The basic cat? I don't know. Rashi seems to be confused about what Bardalus is. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Chayahi. That basically means, I don't know what it is, right? So Rashi says, it's a Chaya.
Here it says, polecat.
P-O-L-E? Oh, man. See, don't talk to me about poles today. Okay, fine. So... You see, I have a one-track mind today, so it's a little embarrassing. But anyway, so what happens over here? Misasan the Esrim Vishalosh. We put them to death. Until now we were talking about Sharniskal, and we said that Sharniskal requires 23 judges. Now we're saying that these six species of animals also require a Bezdin of Chav Gimel. Comes along Rabbi Eliezer and says, what are you joking? You've got a lion that's running loose. You've got a grizzly bear. I'm not going to wait till you convene your 23 rabbis together, you know, in a Bezdin. I'm going to shoot him on the spot. And the quicker you get there, the better. The first one to get there is Zacha. He got the mitzvah. Let's not foot drag over here with a conviction in front of a court of 23 judges. Rabbi Akiva Omer Misasam the Esrim Vishalosh. So the Gemara is going to ask, what did Rabbi Akiva add to the Tanakhama? The Tanakhama says that even in these belligerent animals, which is nearly impossible, if at all possible, to domesticate, nevertheless, we have to wait until we can judge them. Which means that they already committed the crime. They were responsible for killing someone. And until then, we can't judge, we can't kill them. So basically, Rabbi Akiva is reiterating the sheet of the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama says, Misasam b'esrim v'shlosha. That's exactly where Rabbi Akiva says, Misasam b'esrim v'shlosha.
Not only that, by the time you convene 23 judges, you can't tell which lion or which bear actually did it.
Well, I guess they lock it up in a cage or so. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They capture it.
They capture it and they probably put a stamp on it or whatever they do to it. So take a look at Rashi in the second of the wide lines. Hazevari She Misu Adam Vinidonim Biskila Kishar. These animals, according to the Tanakhama, we'll see it again in Rabbi Akiva, have the same status as a shar. There's no difference between an ox and a lion. In both cases, after they kill a human being, we have to convene a Bezdin of 23 in order to judge them for death. The Amriya B'Baba Kama, Echad Shar, the Echad, etc., etc., meaning all these species. And it means that although the Torah speaks about a Shar that killed a person, and says, Ashar Yisakel, it's Lav Dafka. We don't assume that it's only a Shar. So any animal that kills a person has the same identical status as a Shar and will be put to death with a Bezdin of 23, not less. Comes along Rabbi Eliezer and he laughs. Again, it doesn't say he laughs, but I added that. But really, you know, you're going to wait until this animal, which is totally belligerent, you know, kills somebody? It's a little bit late for that. Yeah, I was told, I'm not sure you could Google this, that in Spain, after a bullfight, certain, I guess, it's special bullfights, maybe it's the Super Bowl bullfight, I don't know, they let the bull go amok, you know, wild, and it inevitably kills people. They know that people are going to die. It's almost like car racing in America. I don't know exactly what the percentage of people in car racing die, but it's a serious percentage.
You're thinking of Palermo. They let the bulls out.
People let the bulls out.
And people run in front of them, and the idea is to avoid being trampled or whatever.
Yeah, but people get killed. I mean, this is Western culture. It's crazy. So if you ask me, I would say the Kolokotim Zach, you know, you're the first person to kill the bull. The thing about a bull is that although the Torah speaks about a bull, but it's not talking about what's called a Shor HaEtzadion. That's a sugya of account. If the show is trained to be a killer, then you don't put it to death. It's very interesting. It sounds like the Torah sees an animal as being responsible for its actions, so that's why it's put to death. I mean, the very fact that you need a judgment in front of 23 judges. So those who are in favor of animal rights, you know, you want to know the biblical opinion about animal rights, this is a good sugya to start with, because if we need a judgment of 23 judges for a shor that killed a person, it means we're taking the shor seriously. In fact, the Ramban in his Perush al Torah claims that a shor has a certain amount of seichel to it, some sort of innate intelligence. And the Ramban says that those who interpreted that we kill the shor because of the bailim, it's really a punishment for the owner of the shor who was negligent and watched shor, are very, very much mistaken. Because the law is that a shor hefker is also sokel yisokel, meaning an ownerless shor that kills a person has to be put to death. He says, you see, it's a punishment for the shor. It's not a punishment for the owner of the shor. So I'm just pointing out, you know, if you're interested in philosophy, this is a good sugya to figure out what the Torah thinks about animals. But Rabbi Eliezer, from his perspective, says that this animal is very dangerous, any of these species. And we're not going to wait until it's too late. You know, wait until you do damage control. You know, the animal killed someone. Well, let's make sure it doesn't kill anybody else. Let's try to prevent the original killing. So now, Rav, also, we turn back to Daf Tesvav Amid Beis, and we're ready for our sugya.
If I may ask, what's
please.
Akiva's?
So the Gemara is going to say that Rabbi Akiva accepts the Chachamim, but only until a certain point, only until number six. In other words, the first five species, Rabbi Akiva agrees, we're not going to put them to death unless they killed someone and they were judged and condemned in a court of 23 judges. But the last species, which is called the Nachash, that's where Rabbi Akiva is going to disagree. So Rabbi Akiva is going to accept Rabbi Eliezer part way, as far as the serpent is concerned. And we're not going to wait till the serpent kills someone. But as far as the other five species, he's going to accept the Chachamim that we have to wait until they kill someone. And that now we're going to try to figure out what this is all about. That's really what our sugi is. Now, what we're going to have at this point is a machlokas Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan, but the important introduction to this sugya is that the machlokas between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan revolves around the Shitas Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, Kol HaKodim LaHargon Zach, whoever gets there first to kill them, then we give him brownie points. Amar Reish Lakish, V'hushe He Misu. It's true, we don't wait until the judgment. We're not going to bring the shor into, or I should say the ari, into a court. But we have to wait until they kill somebody. Avalohe misu, lo. So let me try to give you what I think is the pshat here. Let's say you own a lion. I don't know if anyone in this room owns a lion, but you could theoretically own a lion. In fact, it's probably a lot of money to buy a lion. And you claim that you're going to train the lion. Maybe you want to train him for a circus or for some other reason. How does the halacha view this? So, according to the Chachamim, before we get to Rabbi Eliezer, that's not even a question. The answer is, you can own a lion. A lion, let's say, is worth $1,000. I don't know what you pay for a lion on the market. Right? You have your own pet bear, you know, grizzly bear. A killer grizzly bear. But you paid good money for that. I remember my wife and I were in the Rockies. It took us 2 weeks in the Rockies until we, the Canadian Rockies, until we finally saw a grizzly bear. And when we saw the grizzly bear, it was like, you know, we wanted to make a Shechiyonu v'Kimonu. You know, where are the grizzly bears? So if you buy a grizzly bear, you have ownership rights on the grizzly bear. Now you want to tell me you're going to shoot the grizzly bear through between the eyes? Why? Because you think it's dangerous? Go fly a kite. This is my grizzly bear. I'm training it. I'm controlling it. I'm disciplining it.
Question.
Just 1 second.
Okay.
Because I don't want to lose my trend. Comes along Rabbi Eliezer, and he says, no, put it to death. We're not going to wait for Bezdin to condemn the animal. So how far did Rabbi Eliezer go? This is going to be the subject of the debate between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. Let's start with Rabbi Yochanan. I'm going to switch the order for a second. Rabbi Yochanan says, Afal pi sheloim misu. You claim you own an animal which is belligerent, which is dangerous, a lion, a bear? I'm not going to tolerate that. The halacha is not going to recognize your valid ownership and say that you have a right to own this animal. This animal is dangerous. We cannot allow it to live. And therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says, "Kol hakodim zoch." We're not going to wait until it kills somebody. Comes along Reish Lakish, and she says, no. You're taking Rabbi Eliezer too far. Rabbi Eliezer agrees with the Chachamim that a person can own this belligerent animal, and it's his. He has private property over it. You know, we believe in private ownership. This is not a kibbutz. And if it's privately owned, you can't just kill it. So where does Rabbi Eliezer disagree with the Chachamim? He says, don't require in these dangerous species a Bezdin of 23, because the animal has already proven himself to be a killer animal. And with all the respect to the owner who says he's trained the animal and he has it controlled and the animal's going to, you know, he's going to jump through, you know, hoops of fire, that's irrelevant. This animal killed somebody. If this animal killed somebody, it's absolutely proven itself to be an undomesticated, dangerous animal. You can't let that animal live for 1 second. Kol hakodim zocha. So let's read it inside, and then Don, I'll take your question. Omrei Shlokish, v'hu shehe miso. Don't go too far with Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer was not saying that you don't have any private ownership rights over a dangerous animal. You can claim it's your animal, you bought it on the market, fair, and now you're training it. But up until a certain point, but he miso, oh, that's already too much. Avolo he miso lo. If it hasn't yet killed someone, even Rabbi Eliezer agrees that we have no right to go into someone's backyard and he's got a cage with a dangerous animal and shoot the animal and kill the animal. Alma, what do we see from Reish Lakish? The Kasava holds Yeshlem Tarbus, and I'm going to interpret this the way Rashi interprets it. Yeshlem Tarbus means they can be domesticated, you can train them and control them. And therefore, this is how Rashi learns it, the Yeshlem Bailim. Therefore, they have ownership rights, and until the animal, you know, the animal is innocent until proven guilty, meaning the owner of the animal is making a fair, halachic, legal claim on this animal. It's his animal, he's raising the animal, he's training the animal, and that's his moral responsibility. Lotosin dom ve'secha, this is not a dangerous animal. Like the Gemara says, you're not allowed to leave a dangerous ladder, you know, that is, it's because somebody might climb up the ladder and fall and die. You have a rabid dog, you're not allowed to leave that rabid dog around. But this man claims, you know, it's a ferocious lion or bear, but I trained it and I bought it, it's mine. And Yeshlem Tarbus, and it's possible. Again, now we're going to say innocent. Until when? Until proven guilty. So Yeshlem Bailim, they have ownership. We can't, just like we can't violate anyone's ownership, I don't have the right to go into your property and start destroying your property, claiming that it's dangerous, you're owning something that might get out of hand. No, you have a right to say, I'll be careful with it. So for example, if I were to build in my living room a fireplace, and I'm feeding the fire, and the fire is really rising high, so does the fire department have a right to say, that's a dangerous fire, I want to confiscate it from you? And the answer is, according to Reish Lakish, if I can prove that this fire can be contained, then you have rights to say, this is my property, there's no trespassing, and even the fire department can't go in. No one's allowed to go in. But if the animal proves itself to be a dangerous animal and it kills on one occasion, then forget it. Everything goes loose. You have no bailus. It's not yours. We got to kill it as soon as we can. Don't dilly-dally and foot-drag, says Rabbi Eliezer, and wait till you have a condemnation of 23 judges. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afal Pishaloe Miso. Now, we're not going to wait until the animal proves itself guilty and it's a murderous killer animal. Alma Kasavu, we see that. What does Rabbi Yochanan hold? Again, according to Rabbi Eliezer, Ein Lehem Tarbus. No way, no how can you train this animal. Now, again, we know that you can train animals. I mean, if you've been to the circus, you know what I'm talking about, right? We train animals that are very, very dangerous. I don't know, maybe, do they use, I don't know what methods they use to train a lion. I don't know, we have to ask a circus guy. Do they inject some sort of chemicals in it? I don't know.
That would be.
Well, they simply train it. And Rabbi Yochanan is saying, okay, you'll train it a lion. But trust me, says Rabbi Yochanan, the animal is still the same animal that it was before. You can train it, and maybe you'll control it, and you'll feed it, you know, all sorts of good things, and you know, you ever see the dolphin, you know, in the seals, you know what I mean? The seals jump up and they feed them all the time, you know, for everything. You know what I'm talking about, right? So you could train an animal, but in these cases of these species, says Rabbi Yochanan, they're really not domesticated. You may fool yourself into thinking they're domesticated. But wait until they get out of hand. Now, what I don't understand is why alligators are not on this list. Alligators are extremely dangerous. Again, you know, the Indians, you know, the real Indians I'm talking about in America, the American Indians, they knew how to deal with alligators. But even so, I don't even think they train alligators. What they do is they are so... what word am I looking for?
Agile.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I owe you one. And they're so agile, the Indians, that they're able to maneuver in such a way that the alligator won't close its mouth down over their head. But an alligator, as far as I know, is untrainable. I mean, you could talk about terrible catastrophes if you're familiar with it.
They're not indigenous to the area.
Or, I don't know if any of these animals are. I don't know. I haven't seen a lion down the street. Maybe that's because all the lions are in the circus. I don't know. But I'm just mentioning, I would add an alligator to this. As it could be, again, don't quote me on this, that the alligator is included under Nachash. Because an alligator is just a killer. You know, that's, you know, as far as a human being is concerned, that's all an alligator does, is it kills you without any compassion. And it's certainly in the category with a kal v'chomer of all these other animals. Yeah, Don, you wanted to say something before.
Yeah, it may have been answered, but when we originally read the Mishnah, I assumed the animal had already killed, and therefore it had to be judged. But according to this argument between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan, it's not that case. The question is, did the animal kill or not kill yet?
So wait a minute. So in the Mishnah, we were talking about the Chachamim Shita, and we're talking about an animal that already killed.
Ah, we are talking about.
Correct. Taking Shar, and we're expanding Shar to all other animals. Uh-huh. And just like Shar has to be condemned to death if and when it kills somebody, so too these animals are like a Shar.
Okay.
But now we're going to Rabbi Eliezer, and that's where the battleground between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, you know, is fierce. You know, the feathers are flying here. I mean, Reish Lakish says, look, the man claims that he took this animal and he trained it, he domesticated it, it's under his control. You can't kill it. What right do you have to kill it? Is Yeshlan Tarbus, there is a feasibility that the man controlled and trained the animal, and it's now a domestic animal, the Yeshlan Bailam, and therefore he owns the animal, you can't kill it. That's not how far Rabbi Eliezer is. Rabbi Eliezer went as far as to say, forget about judgment if the animal already killed somebody. Rabbi Yochanan says, nay. Rabbi Eliezer went very far over here. You know, Rabbi Eliezer is very angry at these species of animals. Get rid of them. We don't want them. Send them back to the jungle or to the Amazon or wherever they habitate. But don't bring them into society in such a way that human lives are in danger. And therefore, when Rabbi Eliezer said Kolakodim ve misam zacha, Kolakodim lahargan zacha, what he meant was that we're going to give you shishi in the Beis Knesses because you entered into the property of someone else and killed his lion, even though the lion didn't do anything. We can't tolerate ownership over a lion; it's just impossible. You can't domesticate a lion. Now, I'm just looking at my clock because I want to time myself here. There are a lot of points here that have to be made. I think what I'm going to do is the following. Let's finish the sugya inside, even if it means, I realize I'm taking a gamble, that all the points that I want to make here in the sugya will have to wait till tomorrow. Because I think it's important to get the picture. The Gemara actually is going to support Rabbi Yochanan from the language of Rabbi Eliezer. How is that so? Tanan. Let's go back to our Mishnah, says the Gemara. Rabbi Eliezer Omer kol hakodim lahargan zocha. Now at this point, the Gemara thinks that the translation of the word zocha, is zocha b'dinei mamonos. He has some sort of a monetary benefit. So the Gemara says that can only work according to Rabbi Yochanan. Bishlema l'Rabbi Yochanan. We can understand how if you took the initiative and you killed this animal, and again, according to Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Eliezer, you killed the animal before it killed anyone. L'mai zocha. How do we understand that you gain something, you benefit by taking this mitzvah on? And the answer is zocha li'oran. You can take the animal and use its hides and sell it on the market. And why is that so? Because there was no judgment in Beis Din. Let's explain. When it comes to a shor, the halach of a shor is not a belligerent animal, and only in the event that it killed someone, then we judge it in front of a court of 23 judges. Once we judge it under a court of 23 judges, then you're not allowed to have any benefit whatsoever from this ox. We have to put the ox to death, and that's it. Even the ar, even the skins, the hides of the animal are asur. And this is derived in the Gemara Pesachim, not here, from a pasuk that says, Ubal ashar naki. Naki means naki min achasav. He has no financial ownership rights to this animal, and we're going to put the animal to death through skila. And whatever remains of the carcass of the animal, we're going to burn it in a bonfire. No one's allowed to benefit from that animal. However, that's only because there was a judgment. That's only because there was a psak bezdin. And once nigmar dino shel shor, the moment that bezdin passes their verdict that this shor has to be killed, it's a shor niskal, it's osur bano. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the way Rabbi Yochanan understood it, the shor didn't kill anybody. If the shor didn't kill anybody, then obviously there was no judgment. If there was no judgment, there's no isur hanah. Because the isur hanah only applies when there's judgment. That's called nigmar dino osur hanah. So now you went ahead and you killed it. Take the hides and run with them. You know, nobody has bialis. Nobody can claim bialis over this lion. And there was no psak bezdin because Rabbi Elias says we can completely circumvent the courts. Then, you know, kill the animal and take its hides. Elo l'reish lakish l'may zocha. Now, wait a second. I don't understand the Gemara. What do you mean l'may zocha? Zocha li'oron. Why can't reish lakish also accept zocha li'oron? After all, reish lakish, and it's clear from Rabbi Eliezer, can't deny that we circumvent Bezdin. Right, that's the whole thrust of what Rabbi Eliezer says. We're not going to wait till there's a court decision in Beis Din. A verdict is handed down by a court of 23. So there's no nigmar dino that could generate. So the Gemara says, no, I don't understand the coin to Reish Lakish. Kevon Shei Misu, Reish Lakish insists that we're only allowed to kill the Zev and the Ari and the Badalis is only if they killed someone. Right, they go on record. They have a criminal record. Is Shavinu Rabbanon Keman de Gomar Dinayu. The Rabbanon say that there's no difference between the Zev or the Ari, the Baralist, etc., that killed someone, and the Shar that was taken in front of Bezdin after it killed someone and was condemned by the Bezdin to death. What condemns these six species of animals, according to Rabbi Eliezer? The fact that they went ahead and they killed someone. The killing itself on the part of this Zev is a Gemar Din. Now let's go through the Aramaic here. Shavinu, they equated it. Again, you have to write this down. Shavinu, that's a word that appears all over Shav. Shavinu, the Rabbanon equated it. once they killed someone. And Kiman as someone, the Gmar Dinayu, who already had a Gmar Din, he had already a final judgment. Why? Because the Etzem, the Misa, meaning when the animal, the Zev, kills someone, that itself is the Gmar Din on the animal. And therefore, Yisuri Anoninu, which means that you're not allowed to benefit from this animal, not even from its hides. It has the same status as a shor niskal, a shor that killed a human being and then it was sent off the top of the cliff. And even before it's sent off the top of the cliff, the very moment that Beis Din makes a final decision, a verdict is handed down that this is a shor niskal, at that moment it's asur mana. The same thing applies the moment that the zev kills a human being, it is considered kigmar din, as if we have passed judgment on the animal. And therefore, the din of Isra Anah is going to apply equally to a Shara Niskal after Gmar Din and a Zev Li Acher Shehemis. So what does Zacha mean? The Gemara says, my Zacha, what does the word Zacha mean? Zacha L'Shamayim. He gets brownie points in heaven. Give him Shishi. Why? Because he took this mitzvah upon himself, and this Zev is clearly a killer Zev. It's already killed somebody. Don't wait until it kills somebody else. Put it to death. And if you put it to death, the first person to put it to death is going to get points up in Shamayim. He won't get any financial benefit because the animal is asur banah. You cannot even benefit from its hides. But up in Shamayim, you're going to score some points. Tanya Kavase Dresh Lakish. You know, I don't know, would it be Christian to say a good Samaritan? Is that called Christianity? Yeah, okay, so we won't call him a good Samaritan. Anyway, but you get the point. That's called Zocha L'Shamayim. Tanya Kavase Dresh Lakish. We have a brisa that says explicitly like Reish Lakish. This is fascinating because usually in a Machlok Shem Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, who do we paskin like? Rabbi Yochanan. That's a pretty hardcore rule. But here, the poskim want to say that we paskin like Reish Lakish, which is very good for animal trainers, because of a brisa. What does the brisa say? Echad shar shehemis, the echad behema v'chaya shehemisu, the Esrim Ushloshim. This is the Shita of the Chachamim, we call it the Tanakama, that any animal whatsoever, no matter how belligerent it is by nature in terms of the species, it requires a judgment of 23 judges. So just like the case of Shar, which is the paradigm case where the Torah says you can't give the Shar skill if he killed a person until there's a judgment, 23, so to any other animal. It says Echad Behema V'chaya. Behema V'chaya includes all the animals that we have. Shei Misu, and they killed someone. We're going to have to judge them. We can't put them to death. Unless it's Esrim U'Shlosha. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Shar Shehemis, be Esrim U'Shlosha. You're right. In the case of Shar, we have to certainly judge the Shar. We have to judge the Shar. And we're going to wait until Beis Din hands down a verdict. That's called Shara Niskal Nidon B'Esrim U'Shlosha. But Shar Behema Chaya Shem Misa, another animal that kills, is Kol HaKodim LaHargon V'Zocha Behem, an extra word, L'Shamayim. Please underline that word. What we see in this brisa that with regard to other animals, once they kill someone, which is Reish Lakish's interpretation of Rabbi Eliezer and our Mishnah, but now it's explicit in Rabbi Eliezer the Brisa, we have to put them to death, and whoever does that mitzvah first, he gets brownie points in Shamayim, because he fulfilled a great mitzvah saseh of Ubiarta Arav, of Lo Samad Al Dam Reyecha. He kills an animal that's already proven itself to be a killer, and Zocha Bein LaShamayim, the status of the animal after you kill it, it's that Yisuri Anah, you can't benefit from it. It has the same status as the Shor Niskal after the Gemar Din, but at least you get points up in Shamayim for putting it to death. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Misasim V'Esrim V'Shlosha. Frank the Gemara, Rabbi Akiva, Hainu Tanakama. Rabbi Akiva is just reiterating what we saw in the Tanakama, namely that we need a bezdin of Esrim Vishlosha, no matter what animal kills a human being. Ikar Beinayu Nachash. The difference is going to be a serpent. We're going to have to see what qualifies. You know, there are many different kinds of snakes. But basically, the Tanakama would hold that even a snake, if it kills someone, has to be judged, like any other animal, any other species, in front of a beis din in 23. So basically, the Nachash has the same status as an Ari, a Zev, a Bardalus, etc. And the Chacham hold you need 23 judges. Rabbi Akiva comes around, and he says, no, Nachash is different than other animals. And this is based on a principle in Bava Kama that's called Nachash Mu'ad Le'olam. Nachash clearly is a mu'ad. That's what it does. I mean, that's the metaphysical curse, the divine curse from the time of the Eitz Hadas. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva maintains that kol hakodim lahar goes zacha. And I suspect, I'm going to try to prove this to you tomorrow, B'li Neder, that this shita of Rabbi Akiva would reflect Rabbi Yochanan's shita in Rabbi Eliezer with regard to all the other five species. What do I mean? Rabbi Yochanan understands that in Rabbi Eliezer's frame of reference with regard to the other five species, we're not going to wait until they kill someone, but rather we're going to kill these animals immediately and take away their hides, you know, and then sell it on the market. That's called a kodim lahargan zacha, meaning even before they killed someone. That's Rabbi Yochanan's interpretation. The same thing will apply to one species according to Rabbi Akiva, and that's the Nachash. In the case of the Nachash, not only do we completely circumvent the judiciary process of 23 judges to condemn it to death, but moreover, kol hakodim zacha, we're not going to wait until the Nachash finally kills somebody. We're going to kill it immediately on the spot. No one could claim ownership. Now, you and I know that there are very, very dangerous serpents that have been trained. What are they called? The big fat ones, you know, and you see them. Boa constrictor, is that what it's called?
Cobras, pythons.
And you go, if you're in Florida, what's the name of the place? Jungle something or other, you know. So you'll see men come out there and they have the snakes around their neck. And yet we're saying that according to Allah, I can come into this, you know, break into the thing and kill the snake on the spot. And I think the answer to that question is one of two answers. Either we're going to say that Rabbi Akiva is waiting until the Nachash finally kills somebody, which again, I'm not happy with that pshat. Or, more likely, there's no ownership on a Nachash, if it's a killer Nachash. Now, if you train the Nachash, what does that mean? Does that mean that Nachash is safe? You know, you see the guy putting the Nachash around his neck. So now you're going to take your 8-year-old child and expose it to that Nachash? You know what I'm saying?
And the reason you can do that is because the digestive system of the snake is so long that it constricts because it wants to. That's how it kills its prey to eat. But since it's not interested in eating, so it's relaxed. It doesn't.
So the and why knows, is it interested he's in eating? Because they fed it.
He's not in danger. Well, he might have been fed a week before. He takes a long time to digest.
But human beings fed him. Is that what you mean?
Presumably, yeah. He's in captivity. Yeah. Mm.
So that calms him down.
When we first started talking about this, I looked up like ironic deaths.
Oh, great. You looked up what?
Ironic deaths. So they had snake charmers who were killed by the snake.
Really?
You know.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I heard about a story recently also where somebody was training something, a lion or something, and then the lion turned around and killed him.
Well, famous lion tamer of the 1940s and 50s, Clyde Beatty, I think his name was. And he was doing it for like 20, 30 years, and all of a sudden he turned his back on one of his...
Maybe that's the story.
And he was killed.
He was killed.
Yeah.
So maybe it's the idea that the individual lion didn't have to kill him, but before, but the classification of that type of animal, he's a mu'ad.
Right. We have to talk about the species because you don't know, as long as this animal belongs to that species, you don't know what's going to happen. And even if you claim that you domesticated it, it's still a very dangerous situation. Okay. So just before we go, I want to read to you the language of Rashi here, Dibra Maschel Yesh. Rashi says here on Tesvav Beis that once the animal kills, then Nizbarer Hadavar Shalahoy B'nei Tarbus Mitchila. It means that according to Reish Lakish's interpretation of Rabbi Eliezer, once the animal actually kills, we have now a biur, a clarification, that it wasn't a ben tarbus. And with all due respect to your training, your extensive training of the animal, we see that it didn't work. And once you know that it's not a ben tarbus, then you can put it to death. You don't need a bezdin for that. So the Yad Ramah that I keep telling you is the super commentary on Sanhedrin, he's not happy with this. He says, Harei l'divrei Rabbi Eliezer, kol behema v'chaya shei misu, any animal that kills a human being, hadinhu shekol hakodim lahargo zacha, is therefore keitzad nitan lomar shekvasim v'izim shei misu nisbara dover she'enem b'nei tarbus. According to Rashi Shita, the reason why we kill the animal that killed a human being is because la b'nei tarbus ninu, they have proven themselves that they're la b'nei tarbus, and they belong to this category of la b'nei tarbus. Well, that should apply even to other animals. Any animal could prove itself that it's not a ben tarbus. You could have a goat that gets very angry and it could kill someone. V'chi ein shum chayo behema bas tarbus biola. So that means that every single animal might prove itself that it's not a ben tarbus. Why? Because it killed somebody. Why does Rabbi Eliezer single out these five species and then the nachash as the sixth? When according to Rashi, we're not talking about the species, we're talking about this individual member of the species who's proven himself that he's not a ben tarbus. If that be the case, then this halacha should apply to kvasim, to izim, to any animal that normally would be domesticated, and now it's proven itself to be a killer. So Rabbosei, Mir Shem, we'll stop here, we'll talk about this more tomorrow, but there's going to be a whole discussion here about other animals. Now, you know, the Brisa says it applies to all other animals. The Yad Ramah is not assuming so. You see, the Brisa that we finished with says, Shar Be'ema V'chai She Misu, Kol HaKodim LaHargon. According to Rashi, Shar Be'ema V'chai, if it applies above and beyond these six species, would have to mean that they prove themselves to be a Lav Bar Tarbus. That's a little bit strange, because we know that these animals could be, because of their belligerent nature, then you could establish that it's Lav Ben Tarbus. But now we have to expand it, according to Rashi, to include the entire animal kingdom. Any animal could be considered Lav Ben Tarbus if it only proves itself to be a man-killing animal. So I wish everyone a great day, and tomorrow we'll flesh this out. Anyone who's around at 10:30, we'll be covering the sugya on Daf Yud Gimel of smicha, exactly what smicha is all about. And tomorrow we meet at 8:00. Yeah.
How do you know that that's Isra or not?
The Gemara establishes a principle called Shavinu Nigmar Dino. Why? Because at what point can we put the animal to death? If we're putting the animal to death because of potential, maybe this animal, since it belongs to those species, it's potentially a dangerous animal, then there's no gmar din. There's no moment in time where the animal actually did something and we judge it for that action, and therefore we put it into a category of a chiv misa. So that fits according to Rabbi Yochanan. But according to Rabbi Reish Lakish, we're going to wait until the animal kills somebody. Which means that the killing of a human being is a machayev, meaning it's a chiyuv misa that's generated by the act of misa. We don't have to go to bez. But then the halacha, the Gemara says the halacha of Gemara Din applies. Why? Because Gemara Din always applies whenever there's a chiyuv misa. All that Reish Lakish allows us to do is circumvent bez and create a chiyuv misa even without bez. But then the law of Gemara Din should apply. So therefore, what does Zacha mean according to Reish Lakish? Yeah. If he's chayav, you are going to put the shah to death because the shah is chayav misa after he kills someone, then the din of Nigmar Dino Osir Banos should apply, because this is just as good as a Gemara din. Then what's Zacha? What is he getting out of killing it? You know, Gemara thinks that Zacha means he has some cash benefits from it. You know, we give him some sort of a bonus, yeah, a cash bonus.
Or he gets the R.
But according to Reish Lakish, he shouldn't get the R. The R is Osir Banos. And the only answer Gemara can come up is that Zacha doesn't mean financial benefit, it means Hashemayim. He gets brownie points.
Just letting you know,